Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. While you are out shopping for native plants with the intention of brightening your landscape, as well as providing provender for native pollinators, be alert for those plants that have the genus and species name followed by another name in single quotes. This indicates that the plant has been tweaked just a bit and is a cultivar, and also, if it's normally a native plant, may be referred to as a nativar, and is not what is called a straight species. If you're looking to add flowers that will attract butterflies, you need to know a few things about these new variety of flowers that are flooding the nurseries. When horticulturists tinker with native plants to develop or enhance a desired characteristic, for example, plant height, flower size, color range, the presence of doubled petals, and so on, this often results in reducing the quality, accessibility, or even the production of any pollen or scent at all. It also may change the availability of nectar. All of this in favor of catching the eye of the gardener. I've seen sunflower seeds offered in catalogs that tout the lack of pollen in those plants. Nice if you intend to cut and display the flower on a tabletop and don't want a powdery mess below. But having no pollen also means there'll be no seeds for the goldfinches and other birds that we like to attract to the garden in winter. Be sure to read catalog descriptions thoroughly. In developing a unique plant, sometimes a natural variant has been found in the wild and brought into cultivation, but more often it's been developed by a plant breeder and never would be found in nature. In the words of Doug Ptolemy, a University of Delaware entomologist and author of the wonderful book Bringing Nature Home and others, the wide availability of nativars demonstrates the extent to which the nursery trade is still stuck on the idea of plants as enhanced decoration rather than as being something essential to wildlife. These newer plants have become widespread throughout the industry and as such have been used in field trials by agricultural universities across the U.S. as well as at our own Ohio State. It's good that as part of their field trials, OSU Extension has taken the time and effort to observe and record nativars that do attract pollinators. Here is an example of the results of creating a colorful line of coneflowers from the original wild, well-known native purple coneflower, Echinacea purpurea. I read recently about a bee club that, a few years ago, invited a researcher from Old Dominion University to give a talk about that university's research on hybridization of Echinacea, that is, purple coneflower. The plant's often a poster child, as it were, for pollinating insects. This native perennial, in its natural form, is a shade of purple, but has been hybridized over recent years for the nursery trade. The outcome of this plant breeding has been the creation of pretty new colors such as coral, hot pink, white, and so on. Some of the flowers of the new varieties also display more ruffles with their extra petals. Results of the study showed that pollinator preference for the straight species, Echinacea purpurea, followed by Echinacea purpurea white swan, an open-pollinated seed cultivar of the original. The hybrid Echinacea sunrise, a cross between two different species of Echinacea, was less attractive to pollinators, while a double-flowered cultivar, called double pink sunrise, was the least attractive. The reproductive organs, that is, the stamens, which produce pollen, and the carpels, which are part of the female reproductive organ of plants, in these double-flowered varieties have been modified into additional petals, thus rendering the plant sterile, or nearly so, and reducing the quantity and or accessibility of the usual floral rewards of nectar and pollen. Speaking of color, WZMO's Tom Kennedy's last word a couple of weeks ago was a brief, rather curmudgeonly discussion of the discovery of a so-called new color by the professors from the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Washington School of Medicine. Kennedy reported that they have called it Olo, but pointed out that it is essentially a sort of super intense blue-green. Well, that got me to thinking, and in future segments, I intend to explore more aspects of color in the natural world. But to continue my thoughts regarding the attractiveness, or not, of new nativars to humans and non-humans, I will take just a couple of minutes pointing out the fact that different animals see color in a much different way than humans, and from a broad range of spectrums. Birds' ability to see color is far superior to humans' color vision in several ways. While we have three color-detecting cones in our eyes to see red, green, and blue shades, birds have a fourth cone that enables them to see ultraviolet or UV light. Some other creatures see very little color, while bees and butterflies see much more than we humans do also, because color doesn't actually exist. Yeah, you heard me correctly. Color doesn't actually exist. Color is our brain's way of processing light wavelengths. Light hits our eyes, and special cells called photoreceptor cone cells turn it into nerve impulses, which are then passed to the brain and processed into the various colors that we see. Human eyes have more than 120 million rod cells that allow us to process low-level light and the shape of objects, but not color. This all makes it incredibly difficult to test whether animals see in the same colors that we do. As I said, birds, as well as many insects, perceive ultraviolet light. So when pollinators see plants, they see something different on the plant via ultraviolet light than we see using the visible light spectrum. Plants' colors provide visual cues to pollinators, directing them to the pollen source. When we alter plants to make them more visually pleasing to us, the flower colors that we cannot see, but that the bees do, are messed up. With some of the hybrid cultivars, the researchers observed no bees attending those plants. In addition, cultivars or nativars that have been altered to change the size or shape of a flower can prevent certain species from being able to access the flower at all. Also, when we modify plants to make them pleasing to us, not just color-wise, but also making them pest-resistant, we may be depriving food to insects at the base of the food web, insects that then feed birds and other species. Nature has created plants a certain way for a reason. Now, I'm not suggesting that gardeners should never buy these new kinds of plants. Just be aware, and if you're interested in supporting pollinators of all kinds, choose primarily to use the native plants over cultivars or nativars to ensure that the pollinators, insects, birds, and so on, have what they need. In researching this segment, I learned some interesting facts about how monarchs find milkweed. As I'm sure our listeners know, that's the only host plant, that is, the only plant species, on which they lay their eggs, as well as how the insects locate flowers that do offer a sugar reward in return for the pollination provided by the monarchs and other insects that visit them. If you look at a basic plant biology book, you'll find diagrams that show stomata on the leaves. These stomata are rather like pores, and simply put, they open and close on the plant leaf in response to how much water the plant has. It's how a plant transpires, that is, releases water, CO2, and so on. Along with water, volatile gases are released that can contain all kinds of signaling chemicals as well as waste products. Typically, insects, including butterflies with caterpillars that eat plants, look for this plant signature. Female butterflies that are looking to lay eggs are exquisitely tuned to this chemical signature. For example, monarchs search using chemoreceptors in their antennae. Some butterflies even learn to find correct leaf shapes. Pipevine swallowtails are one example. Once the female monarch lands on a leaf, she tastes the plant by scraping through the waxy cuticle of the leaf with her feet and samples the leaves with chemoreceptors on the feet. If these receptors identify the plant as milkweed, and it is of the right quality, it induces her to lay eggs. Reproductive female monarchs continuously move across the landscape in search of milkweed on which to lay the eggs. This is one reason it's important to plant multiples of the same kind of plant in order to attract butterflies or other pollinators. One single plant of some species is not going to emit a sufficient amount of specific chemicals full of a field of other plants that are putting off their chemicals. That's why butterfly gardens should be planted with masses of plants of the same sort together. It increases the likelihood of a butterfly finding their target species. Interestingly enough, there also are parasitoid wasps that find their caterpillar victims by those chemicals that a plant starts to put out while being chewed upon. Call it nature's alarm system. Scientific studies of monarch butterfly color vision have demonstrated that they have true color vision. That is, they can discriminate colors on the basis of wavelength, independent of intensity, and they rapidly learn to associate colors with sugar rewards and ignore other ones that don't offer such a reward. Behavioral trials confirm that monarchs are proficient and flexible color learners. These capabilities should allow them to respond rapidly to changing nectar availabilities as they travel over their migratory routes across both space and time. Butterflies can see more of the visible light spectrum than humans can, a little further into the red end of the scale. Like many insects, Lepidoptera also are able to see ultraviolet light. Dr. David Lees, curator of Microlepidoptera at London's Natural History Museum, explains, "This level of color sensitivity is vital, not just for finding flowers, but also for finding perfect camouflage backgrounds and for seeking out other butterflies. It is especially useful for fluttering after romantic partners and for sparring males." While moths often do not get the attention that generally the more colorful and noticeable butterflies do, since most moth species are most active at night and therefore less visual, they are beneficial to the environment in a number of ways. They pollinate flowers, help seed production, and whether as larvae or as adults, they are also food for many species of insects, frogs, birds, bats, and other wildlife. There is just ever so much more to learn about color, but lack of time says we'll have to return to the topic further at a later date. This is Carol Kelly saying, after the many days of dismal skies and incessant rain that we had this first week of May, when the sun finally burst through on Wednesday and brightened the greens of the trees and the grasses, as well as the rainbow of colors of the neighborhood spring flowers, it really almost was like entering into the land of Oz here in Ohio's green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.